stay the course. We are dead. We are all dead.
We're supposed to make the world a better place. What happened?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I know Kung Fu.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane. This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombie Land.
This whole thing is insane.
Man is evil, capable of nothing but destruction.
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert. Of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator? That's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is, especially when you arrive to Aeon Byte Live. I hope you're ready to enter that inner sanctum of Gnostic secrets, where you can find so much myth, magic, and meaning. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your pompous of Gnosis, that madman across the waters of creation, and I am truly happy that you are here. I am happy you're here in any version or medium that we are talking to through the great miracles of technology. And for those of you already streaming into the YouTubes, good to see you, and I hope you're having a good Mars Aries day. Our guest, though, is actually, he is in Mercury. He is in Hermes day, and it is truly a pleasure to have back for a second time Jake Coburn. Jake, how are you? And I hope you're a little bit wiser and more at peace than last time we talked.
Definitely a little bit wiser, I hope. I'm quite good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure always having you, man. Love what you're doing. And with us too, we've got the Moondog Vance and his tired eyes. How are you, Vance? Oh, you're on mute. You're so tired. You lost your voice.
Nah, my finger got tired, you know? Not bad for the end of the day. Maybe some magic can wake me up here.
That's what it's for. Yeah, awakening on all levels, I suppose. Well, again, good to see everybody who is in the chat. As always, if you have any questions for Jake or complaints against Vance and I, please super chat them so we can separate them and get to your issues or burning desires. As always, please support this venture in any way you can. I know these are hard times for people, but you can join easily at Patreon for something like $1 a month. I do have the Red Circle app where you can join for, I think, $4.99 a month, and you get all complete shows streamed to your app. Good quality, cleaned up, just as you will in Patreon or AB Prime. And again, if you can, please subscribe, share. Tell everybody about this venture, this center of Gnosticism we call the Virtual Alexandria, or I like to call it the Virtual Alexandria. And Jake's backdrop looks like, again, as I told him, like he went back to the real Alexandria. So awesome. Well, let's get started with you, Jake, just briefly, since it's, I think it's going to be, I think it was 20, when was it, 2022, the last time you were on the show, or was it last year?
I think it was 2022, yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah, kind of, it was still like lockdown days and so forth, still another era, and we're getting into even a weirder era. If this continues, we're going to be up in a mushroom smoke by what the news is telling us. But that's why we're here, to help people wake up and push back against the war pigs and the lords of destruction. But since then, Jake, tell us about your new book that's coming out and everything about it, The Path Within, Ritual Magic, and the Gateways to Self-Mastery.
Well, yeah, that's what I've been mainly working on since we last spoke. It is my attempt of creating a an accessible introduction to practical ritual magic. It's a compendium of different practices that I've used that have helped me to transform myself and my life and have aided me. I basically wanted to try to write a book that could reach an earlier version of myself. You know, I think that a lot of your listeners can probably resonate with being in a place in their lives where they're seeking. And anybody that's come to your podcast is already much farther along that path than maybe I was back when I started on the journey. So I wanted to, I'll backtrack. A lot of my first exposure to ritual magic was through the work of Aleister Crowley and these other kind of more classical texts on magic, which I found a little bit obscure and difficult to penetrate. They weren't immediately practical for me in my life. So I wanted to write a kind of translation of those sorts of texts that explained the theories and practices in a manner that could be directly applicable to people's lives and help benefit them. So there are a lot of traditional practices we explore in the book, the Kabbalah, the Tarot, rituals like the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram that you've seen published in a million books before. But I did aim to create a more accessible translation for people, as well as a wider toolkit that enables people to create whatever kind of transformation that they are seeking at that stage in their lives.
Wonderful. And for the audience, your background is magic, but you're also a visionary artist too, right? Maybe tell the audience about your holistic background that made you Jake today.
Well, I mean, that's a long story, but yeah, I am a visual artist by trade primarily, and within that I have mostly fallen in with the visionary art community and genre, which to me is basically the same thing as esoteric art. It's art that utilizes symbolism to express esoteric concepts and can often illustrate mystical experiences or occult experiences that people have had firsthand. And so my definition of visionary art is quite broad, whereas for some people, perhaps it's only related to psychedelic experiences or things like ayahuasca, which I have explored as well in my path. But for me, you know, like Austin Osman Spare is a visionary artist because his use of ritual magic informed his artwork, and he was using essentially channeling to allow for non-human influences in his work and things like that. So I certainly have fallen into that strange sort of wizard niche of visionary art and the art that I create. Although over the last couple of years, I've also been exploring a lot more kind of abstract art. And to me, this is also visionary art, but it's exploring something beyond the symbolism, you know, trying to communicate in a more direct manner just the pure energy behind my experiences.
And did you study under Lawrence Caruana in Vienna?
I did, yeah. Yeah, that was certainly one of the highlights of my life. And for a moment, what was being created there in Vienna was something truly special. And Lawrence is an amazing scholar. Whew. He's probably one of the most knowledgeable esoteric scholars I've ever met. And he's an extraordinary artist. And it was a real privilege to be able to learn from him.
Oh, I agreed. The man, I have his books, all of his books, and he doesn't have a PhD, but he's so much better than people with PhD. His grasp of Gnosticism, Hermeticism, Egyptian magic, Hindu symbolism, and he's just a nice, nice guy. You know, I'm very sorry that the place closed down because of everything that happened, but still, I know he touched a lot of people and probably open so many channels of communication for people. And he's not done. I mean, it's not like, you know, he has a lot of good stuff ready to give to the world. So it's such is life.
Yeah, the current continues. I think that these types of things like the Vienna Academy, they take shape for a moment, but then they transform into something else. And there have been, you know, new types of, you know, there's a lot of online stuff that emerged from that and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Things go. I mean, you the blows come. You just got to go with it. It means your soul or the gods has another purpose for you. The only thing that makes it worse is our egos getting in the way. And yeah, that's advice I could give myself. Well, so I guess I should ask you, if you could go back, obviously, to your younger self and say, you know, this is a clearer way of doing magic and all that, what other advice would you give your younger self in life that, like me, went through periods of depression and struggle and abuse? What would you tell your younger self?
Yeah, well, as I said, that was a big motivation for writing this book, is understanding that many people are depressed. Many people are in states of suffering and confusion in their lives. And I guess that I had, like, when I was younger, I was very depressed. I was very overweight. I probably like weighed more than 100 pounds more than I do currently. And that was very challenging for me, and wrestled a lot with sort of suicidal ideation and things like that. And I was very resistant to what kind of existed around me to try to pull me out of that, the kind of, I guess, more mainstream mental health kind of world didn't really appeal to me, or the types of advice that people were giving me didn't reach me. But I did have this fascination with magic and the occult, and for me, I found a lot of solace in music, you know. And so a lot of my musical influences were metal bands and things like that that were interested in this kind of stuff. So I could have been reached in a way through magic had I kind of found that sooner. And for me, the most revolutionary idea of magic is that we can change things. We can change anything, that we are never stuck in a particular identity. We're never stuck in a particular situation, or we're not limited by our circumstances, that although we may face particular challenges in life, there are tools that we can use that we can actively change things. You know, so I felt helpless. I felt hopeless because I felt completely stuck in that place of depression and unhappiness and suffering. And I think even given the awareness that there was another way, that I could change things, that things would get better, that things could get better through my own creativity and through my own influence, that I can be empowered to create radical change both in myself and in my life, that would have been a very healing idea for me and a very empowering idea. So those are the ideas that I wish to impart with this book, as well as the specific practical tools to do that.
Well, I'm glad you're giving it to the world. Very important. But either way, magic and art really helped you heal and grow as a person, right? You wouldn't, in a way, you wouldn't change a thing, because, you know, that's how you grew through all this pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I just buried my head in books about magic and in my paintings. And that's what essentially catalyzed the transformation in me growing into the person that I am now. And I hope that every person can reflect back on their struggles that they've faced in their lives and can see that as contributing to them becoming who they really needed to become. But yeah, for me, my initial foray into the esoteric world was through lucid dreaming, which was remarkably fascinating. Still, to me, one of the most fascinating things you can experience, because I would go on these sojourns into inner worlds of enormous complexity that didn't seem to come out of just my subconscious brain material, as people try to explain dreaming as. And those were really my first kind of transcendent or mystical or numinous experiences, and really opened my eyes to the possibility of there being kind of objective realities that exist outside of us, you know, because those worlds that I visited didn't feel like me. They didn't feel like I was just, you know, processing what happened in my day-to-day life. They were really alien and really strange. But to be able to also have that sense of creative agency that one can have in a lucid dream when you become aware that you're dreaming and can take control of that state to shape it and to, you know, be like Neo in the Matrix and play with that kind of power, was also really healing for me, who at the time didn't feel like I had much control or power in my life. But is also a potent metaphor for the awakening process in general. And something that I think the practice of magic allows for us is to become more of a lucid dreamer within the kind of dream of existence, and to see from a perspective in which we have greater creative agency over our lives in general.
Well said indeed. And yeah, I love what you say, because one of the insights that helped me years ago, I'm trying to think who it was. It was a Jungian, I don't know if it's Robert Johnson, but he always said that the desire for to end your existence is not, your ego takes it as, oh, I got to get rid of my body, but it's actually your soul telling you, you got to get rid of your worldview. Your worldview doesn't work. And, you know, we were raised with certain religions and parental programming and neighborhood rules and all that. And your soul just realizes this is shit. You know, there's more. There's a lot more that I want to bring out to express into the world for the process of individuation. So I want your worldview to be destroyed and you start over, because your real you isn't tied to your church or your school or your political party or even your parents. But the problem is that the ego thinks, oh, I guess I better end my meat sack incarnation. And it gets it wrong. But once you listen to your soul and you start to get a new worldview, that's, you expand this place for ideas, for creation, for love, for everything. And that's when things get, it's an incredible journey. And still, I still get stuck in my worldview sometimes. And I realize I'm just making myself smaller. Would you agree with that too? That we can really change who we are without our authentic self changing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's the awareness, which is at the root of all of the identities. And then we can be many different people throughout our lives as our ego shifts. And I think that the practice of magic, especially as it's kind of contextualized within chaos magic, is essentially willed ego death. You know, that in order, and this is something that I talk about throughout the book as well, but in order to have any kind of external shift, it needs to be preceded with an internal shift. And so really it's the concept of ourself, it's our ego that needs to die and be reborn, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to become this new version of ourself in order to step into that shift or that change that we wish to see within our lives. And ironically, when you get that shift or change, you're not going to be the same person that you were when you were desiring that change as well. So there is this constant sort of death and rebirth process to spiritual growth and evolution. And I think that cultures such as indigenous or traditional cultures that support rituals that allow for ego death as initiations tend to be better adjusted, you know, because I think that people get stuck in this kind of adolescent ego without a ritual to transform that or to purify that into the stages of adulthood. And I think having those kinds of rituals, whether that's something like an ayahuasca ceremony or some kind of intense trial or a vision quest or something, it can be very beneficial to have those experiences to be reborn into this more mature version of yourself.
Very true. I think that's what Jung said too. The arrival of the self is the defeat of the ego. So the ego needs to just get on board with the greater good. And obviously going back to Lawrence again, his books have such a good, he's got such a good grasp for Gnosticism and Hermeticism. Even in one of his books years ago, before almost academia finally went on board, Jake, he was talking about how the Gnostics and Hermetics were just a dead ringer to the Egyptian mysteries. And he showed ancient Egyptian mysteries of flying through the heavens that were just like the Gnostic ones found in the Nag Hammadi library. Thousands of years, but the Gnostics are just a continuation. But maybe tell the audience Gnostic and Hermetic lore is in your work or your book or inspired you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as expert about Gnosticism as you may be, or as Lawrence, maybe I've been more inspired by Hermetic ideas. And I think mm-hmm. that the simple concept of as above, so below is something that certainly informs my practice of magic, to understand that within our subconscious minds, that is like the content of our subconscious minds is ultimately what gives birth to our realities and to our lives. And we're always seeking congruence with our external world and our internal world. And so as our external world shifts, our internal world adapts to that. And as our internal world shifts, our external world must adapt to that as well. The subconscious mind is always seeking confirmation of its biases. And so a lot of the techniques of magic, whether it's using a sigil or it's using visualization or forms of affirmation or more complex ritual practices, it's really about sculpting and molding the contents of our subconscious so that it prints out a reality that is more in line with our conscious desires.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed, for sure. And Vance, what do you think? Do you have any questions this early about magic and all that?
Well, yeah, I was thinking, do you have anything to say about like solitary versus group magical practices? I'm guessing that your practice is mostly solitary, but do you do anything in groups?
Yeah, I've hosted a number of retreats and classes and workshops in which I've come together to practice magic with groups as well. And it can be very empowering. I think that there's an egregore that gets upheld through the collective. So if you have a number of people all concentrating together upon a person's intention, which is how I've tended to practice it, where other people are in more of a supporting role towards a single person's intention, and people take turns kind of with that approach, that can really strengthen that the power of that person's intention. It kind of it just boosts the signal, it seems to me. But most of my magical practice has been solitary, quite private in a way. And I also think that there can be something very sincere to that, because it's this deep creative, artistic, and emotional process that you're doing really fully just for yourself. There can be a lot of kind of pretension to other forms of artistic practice, whether it's intended to be like that or not, but because you're trying to placate an audience or something like that. And I really do feel like some of the work I do in ritual as a creative and magical process ends up being some of the most sincere work that I do, because no one sees it, and it's just the genuine emotional expression of that moment for the sake of the ritual.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you is I was interested in, if you could share some of the details of one of the worlds you visited during lucid dreaming, that'd be of interest to me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was many, many years ago, but I still remember some of those places quite vividly. I can recall this one world that was kind of like a cloud world, but had all of these kind of infinite staircases that went out into different places. And I would kind of follow these staircases, not knowing where they led. And they would sort of end up in these strange, outcroppings with I don't know, like weird, like rocks and strange creatures and things like that. That just didn't really seem to come out of any sort of fantasy world that I had read about or something that I had particularly imagined, and had no real like context or bearing to my personal life. But yeah, it was like I explored lucid dreaming mostly when I was a teenager. So it's more than 10 years ago now, but it was a really extraordinary experience. I still do go through phases where I practice lucid dreaming, but it takes a lot of intentionality. You know, like if I'm going to get into a rhythm with lucid dreaming, I have to really set my mind on that and be focused on it for a while.
Did it have any Waffle Houses or Denny's?
No, but I mean, you can construct that if you want. There's two different approaches to lucid dreaming. One is that you go in there and you use it as a playground and you want to kind of control every aspect of it. But something that I found to be more interesting was just kind of exploring that terrain of that world, you know, and not necessarily trying to control it, but more just seeing what it was out of curiosity.
Fascinating. Yeah, I've never tried it. My wife has done it many times, but with me, it's simply because my Jungian advisor said, look, Miguel, you're supposed to be listening to your soul or the unconscious or the gods, not effing with them. You know what I mean? You're supposed to open your ears. You've messed up most of your life. Open your ears and let it come to you. So I was always told in dreams, don't manipulate them. Just record them and decipher the dreams and the energies and all that. What do you think, Jake?
Well, in Buddhist practice, they cultivate a lucid, some cultures in Buddhism cultivate a lucid dreaming practice for the sake of maintaining a continuity of mindfulness throughout even the dreaming state. And I think that you can, well, like I said, I had dreams that I would consider transpersonal dreams. But I think that if you cultivate a lucid dreaming practice, you could still, you know, use that as valid content for a Jungian dream exploration,
right?
You know, and like I said, not all lucid dreams necessarily have to be manipulated, but it's really fun if you do want to do that, you know, and fun is kind of underrated in the esoteric arts,
very.
You know, so just doing something because it's kind of awesome is also okay.
Yeah,
so if you did want to explore that, Miguel, I wouldn't tell your therapist your secret is safe with me.
Yeah, I need a lot of listening anyway. I mean, I need so much. I need to still learning how to listen to my soul. So,
yeah. Do but with yeah, that wilt, right? Do with that wilt. Or not.
Or that not. Yeah, not yeah, yeah. Yeah, as long as there's love involved, as they say. For example, I guess the question too would be psychedelics. I mean, it seems that in our world, even in the occult, you've got the shaman psychedelic group. You know, I'm gonna go to Peru, or with me I do Santo Daime and in Portugal, whatever. But then you've got the occult ceremonial magic. I have a feeling you believe that these should work together, right? And entheogens should be a normal part of any spiritual practice, as has worked in your life.
I mean, psychedelics have profoundly benefited me. I'm an advocate for psychedelic healing. I think that they should be accessible to people in the right way, you know, in a safe practice for people to receive benefits from them if they're facing existential or psychological issues like PTSD, for example, or addiction. There's a lot of psychological ailments that have been now rigorously documented through scientific study to show that psychedelics can really benefit that. And I believe it's part of our birthright as human beings to have that accessible. But I actually do think there's a lot of crossover between shamanic traditions and ceremonial magic traditions. For example, for most of human history, magic has been done through spirit contact and through basically eliciting the help of different spirits and allies, and in some cases demons or angels, you know, many different kinds of entities and beings. And that is a large practice within ceremonial magic, especially Solomonic magic and other forms. It is actually the way it's also practiced in Peru with curanderos within ayahuasca traditions. In many of those cultures, as I understand it, is that they use ayahuasca as a way of piercing the veil, being able to see and communicate with different spirits. And then they employ the agency of those spirits to help conduct healing for people. So that's actually not very different from the way many ceremonial magic rituals are undertaken. And I think if you go back far enough to ancient Egypt and ancient Greece, I wouldn't be surprised if there were psychedelic agents used within ceremonial magical practices. We have like the rites of Eleusis and things like that, that probably the ceremonies and rites and rituals were probably similar to ceremonial magic, although we don't know for sure what went on there. But we do know that they used kaikion, some form of psychedelic agent, to alter their consciousness during those rites and rituals. Crowley used psychedelics, primarily mescaline, during some of his ritual practices, and also cannabis quite extensively. So, yeah, and I think it's quite common now, especially within chaos magic, for people to experiment with all kinds of different altered states of consciousness and substances for their magical work, you know. And I am, I guess, in essence, a chaos magician, although I've studied various traditions, including Thelema and Golden Dawn and these more kind of traditional schools and canons of magic. But my practice is very syncretic and anarchistic in terms of what I employ and what I adopt. And that's what I encourage for people to do as well, is to essentially experiment for themselves and see what works. You know, I'm not going to make a blanket statement that says that psychedelics are right or good for everybody, because they're not, you know. But I think that they can be used to benefit if used safely and relatively responsibly within a controlled environment.
Well said, and would agree too. Yeah, don't go at it alone. Make sure you having a good shaman or physician around or whatever makes a big difference, because like you said, you are going into the underworld with these substances, with this magic, and sometimes you might get stuck in the underworld. You need somebody to guide you out. So there's no guarantees, but that's the risk. We go into the underworld, we find our treasure, and then we come back transformed, same as it ever was. Nothing has changed, as much as we think we've created all these new systems and found all these new drugs and all that. So it's a same Joseph Campbell game. What about the idea of magic and finding your true will? How have you maybe innovated it or translated, and how does it lead to healing? And I hope it's not too much of a loaded question, Jake, but it's important for many people.
Yeah, I mean, the true will is something that I kind of contemplate regularly, and that my ideas shift around over time. I think that the idea of the true will is close to the philosophical concept of essentialism, which is that we are born with a spirit, some kind of innate nature that we need to discover and forge our lives around. But in some ways, I'm also an existentialist, which is that we create ourselves, you know, that we don't necessarily have some kind of predestined purpose or meaning in our lives, and that's something that we create and that we discover. So my personal view of the true will is a meeting of those two points somewhere in the middle, where I do think that we have some kind of essential nature. There's some part of us that is unchanged from the moment that we are born to the moment that we die. And that the more that we can live in accordance with that sort of essential self, the more harmonious our lives will unfold, and the more empowered and fulfilled we will be, but that there's a lot of variance within that as well, and that it's not really set in stone, and that there is a lot of responsibility that we also must take for ourselves in the decisions that we make in shaping our lives and the meaning that we give to our decisions, as well as to life in general. And I personally find that to be more empowering. Sometimes the sort of essentialist view that there is this very strict true will purpose that we must follow can feel kind of limiting to me, you know, and takes away some of the freedom and play that I think that magical practice should grant somebody. I think it should make somebody feel more free, not less free. And I'm sure there are people that may disagree with that. And it's also it's a little complicated too, because we often ascribe moralistic values in our assessment of true will. But it may be that one does cruel things, but yet they are actually very much in alignment with their true will. You know, I've rewatched Star Wars recently, and Anakin was prophesied to bring balance to the Force, and then he betrays and kills the Jedi. And it's like, well, did he fulfill the prophecy? You know, maybe the light was out of balance, and so he had to tip it back, you know, the scales to make it balance by going towards the dark side. And I think that it is a lot more nuanced than, you know, if you're doing your true will, like things are going to be all nicey-nice all the time. And sometimes great tyrants perhaps are doing their true will, even if they are, you know, creating suffering for other people. And maybe the suffering that they create for other people now ends up with coming into balance with a lot of, you know, happiness and freedom for people in the future. It's difficult to say. And this is something that I think Crowley was largely like amoral. Like, he didn't take a moral stance around the true will. And that I think he would agree that it doesn't always mean that what you're doing is nice for yourself or for other people necessarily. It just means that you are acting in the role that was appointed to you to play out in the kind of story and drama of life.
And what are some signs you would say from Crowley or yourself that you are closer rather than farther from your true will, and not in some ego trap or culture programming or something like that? How do you know you're getting there or closer to it?
From my personal experience, there is a quality of flow and synchronicity. Just a feeling that you're in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people, doing the right things. Things just seem to kind of click when you're in that state, when you're rooted in the sphere of Tifereth, when you're acting more from your soul and less from your ego. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not a linear journey. And I think that that's something that's important to emphasize. None of this is really. Enlightenment's not a linear journey. The realization of the true will isn't a linear journey. One of my primary Buddhist teachers, Jack Kornfield, wrote a great book called After the Ecstasy, The Laundry, which is about that exactly, which is, you know, you reach enlightenment, but then, you know, you got to come down the mountain. You still got to do your laundry. It's like, you know, the same thing with the true will. I think we can touch that place of Tifereth. We can come into the knowledge and conversation of our holy guardian angel. We can ascend to the peak of the mountain, but then sometimes we also come back down, you know, and there's a relationship there that we have to foster through our own effort and cultivate. And sometimes we're closer to the mark, and sometimes we stray away from that. And that straying away from that, I believe, is also an essential part of the journey, that it ultimately contributes towards us fortifying and strengthening that true will. And sometimes to know our true will, we have to act in opposition to it.
And you think that the use of magic can be good or effective in healing our past trauma in the way psychedelics can do it and therapy can do it and ancestor work? You think that works too, or how has it worked for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that magic can be used for anything, you know, just like language can be used for anything. And if you speak with a good therapist, that can be healing for trauma. But, you know, somebody says something very, very mean, very hurtful for you, that can be traumatizing. And I think with magic, it's the same. It's kind of a, like magic is not either good or bad. Mm-hmm. It has the potential to be both healing and destructive, depending on how it's used. But if somebody wanted to undertake certain rituals for emotional healing, you can absolutely do that through magic. And that's a beautiful intention and something that I think can only strengthen your true will. You know, I think trauma is really one of the things that hinders us from being able to discover and act from our true will. And the more work that you can undertake to heal that trauma through a variety of different disciplines, including therapy or possibly shamanic work or hypnosis or magical practice, the more you can heal that. And creativity, art is also incredibly healing to take these traumatic experiences that we all face in life and to be able to create something beautiful from them. That's a very healing process and very empowering. And so that's something I also work with people a lot around and within my own magical practice. But yeah, I definitely think magic can be very healing for people, and they could utilize sigils for that. They could utilize astral projection, and within astral projection, call forth the presence of certain types of beings that could give them information on their healing journey. They could call forth archangels, like Gabriel is the archangel of that typically deals with emotional matters. So they could evoke Gabriel and work with Gabriel as a way of seeking healing for their emotional ailments. There's a variety of different means through magic. And I also think that the awareness and the different states of consciousness that can be reached through magical practice and adjacent practices like meditation can also give us a better relationship to our trauma by understanding that we are not the trauma, that the trauma in a way is an artifact of our ego selves, and that the true awareness that we are is only the witness to that. So meditation to me is one of the foundational practices of magic. And so meditation is also very healing for these types of things, I believe.
Oh, agreed with you. Yeah, certainly on the meditation and certainly on everything else too. And yeah, one of the biggest lies I used to tell myself is that time heals all wounds. And then you learn, no, trauma is timeless. It doesn't obey space and time. It's right there, and it actually grows with time if you give it. It's like a witiko or something. So you have to give it your attention, your magic. And sometimes the trauma just wants to be acknowledged. You know, there's part of you that's a wounded child that's still there in that time and place, or somebody whose heart was broken and that's frozen forever as a scar in your psyche, and it simply wants to come back to you. So it can be a great teacher too. It can be a friend. So, but I'm over here all over the place. What do you think, Vance, or any questions from thee?
Well, yeah, dreams can be a good indicator of past traumas, because like I've got recurring dreams. You know, I used to, but not anymore. It's interesting about my father yelling at me, right? And he was always mean, but lately it's changed. So my father and mother appearing in my dreams, both, they're both passed away, by the way. And it's, so something must have healed, but for a long time it wasn't. But Jake, speaking of dreams and so forth, or you know, ethereal realities, I had an idea that I wanted to ask you, which is, I assume that you probably have an altar and magic ornaments and gosh, the word flew out of my artifacts and so forth that you use in your practice. What would you think about a virtual reality-based magical, you know, arena where you, you know, didn't have physical things, but you had, they were in a cyber world, you know, like 3D worlds like Active Worlds or what's the other one? Second Life or something like that.
Tron.
is there a virtual world that you can go to with a Tron?
Yeah, I wish.
There probably is one somewhere. Well, what do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I've explored virtual reality in magical practice in a way that was pretty cool. There's a program called Tilt Brush, which lets you draw and paint in VR. And I've used that for doing, you know, the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram and really being able to see the pentagrams drawn out and like the archangels there. And wow. I find that at least as an aid to being able to visualize it in your mind, it's a really fun projection of your consciousness to explore that. And I've also used it for different forms of sigilization work and things like that I found to be really powerful. I mean, it's when you're in VR, you are completely immersed. So I feel like it has a very powerful impression upon your consciousness. And so I think it can be a great way to do sigil magic because you're fully immersed within the sigil. You know, it's not just like a little, you know, piece of paper. It's you're in the world of the sigil. Yeah. And I know that people have created VR temples. There was somebody created, I haven't tried it personally. I think you needed some other kind of VR equipment that I didn't have, but somebody created like a Golden Dawn neophyte initiation ritual in VR. You know, and I think that as we become more spread out in the world and kind of more like less localized, that these types of things can be really great to be able to uphold some of these traditions and for people to still receive initiations that would typically be undertaken in groups and to be able to do them with other practitioners online. It's something I'd like to see more of. I haven't really seen it developed that thoroughly yet, but I think it could be very powerful. I have friends that have endeavored to create essentially, mind-altering experiences with VR, things that would simulate psychedelic experiences and things like that. And those are very cool as well.
Interesting. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, about the sigils, though, how do you charge a VR sigil? Hopefully not the Grant Morrison way, especially wearing a headset.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much I can share on this podcast, but I mean, for me, I tend to use meditation. You know, I've used sex magic to charge sigils, and it's excellent. It's a very effective way to do it, either by yourself or with other people. Right. And there's a reason why that's kind of a tried and true method, because there is an enormous charge and kind of power that comes about with sex that when directed effectively can be a very strong battery for magical work. But for me, I kind of tend to, so there's inhibitory and excitatory methods of charging sigils. So an excitatory method would be something like sex magic or through, jumping around to music or these kinds of things. But I tend to go towards the more inhibitory methods. And so for me, I tend to just focus on the sigil through deep concentration and stillness in my meditation practice. And that tends to work for me. So within VR, for example, I mean, you could create some kind of an animation, which is something that I've done also, and then watch it in VR while in a deep state of concentration. And I've used binaural beats, for example, as a way of creating the brain entrainment with the VR animations as a way of charging the sigils.
Love it. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thanks for sharing. So much possibility, and glad you're leaning into technology, which is another fire from the gods, so we should use technology. What do you think about AI? Are you using AI at all in your practices or in your art or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I have used Midjourney and DALL-E for image generation, for reference, for some of my visual art. It's actually great for if you need like a reference for anatomy for some kind of creature, right, or something like that. But I think it also has a lot of potential for use with magical practice or for just self-reflection and things like that. I think, you know, like I was reading part of a book yesterday that had some exercises in it that were kind of self-reflection exercises. So I went on to ChatGPT, gave it the chapter and said, let's do this exercise together. And so it was kind of like I was working with a coach or a therapist, and it would ask me questions, and then I would think about it and write out my answers to it. And it just created a bit more interactivity for doing that practice. I probably could have just done it by myself as well. And I think that in terms of its magical applications, probably for it might maybe ChatGPT or some kind of AI could help assist in constructing certain types of rituals or practices or writing invocations or spells or these kinds of things. I think that when it comes down to it, probably things that arrive spontaneously out of our own hearts is better. But if somebody wanted to explore those tools, and I understand the implications of the tools can be frightening to some, and maybe for good reasons, but while they exist now and they're kind of infancy, I think it's relatively harmless to at least explore and experiment and play with it and to treat it like an experiment and something to be playful with. And I've had fun doing so.
Yeah, as people don't understand, you are also educating the AI. When you're putting stuff about art or Thelema and AI, it is learning from you and spreading that information to others. So it is interactive, and I've had friends come up with some wonderful stuff, like, I want to start a religion that's a mixture of Gnosticism and Taoism and pretend, you know, and they get some good stuff. And doesn't mean they adopt them, but they get insights on their spirituality. They work harder. They get some decent prayers. Remember Ashley Vance from Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
She went down the deep, really deep rabbit hole. Maybe tell the audience about that.
Yeah, she had the whole the panoply of ethereal beings and so forth. It was... and she went very, very deep into it. She even married some in the virtual universe. It was quite. She's not doing too much more of that now. They kind of faded out. But yeah, she was using AI to basically, kind of like I hate to say Ouija board because that's kind of a lower level, but communicating with quote unquote other beings. And you know, it was something that made you think, because when you're talking with this thing, you're really talking with a huge amount of information that's put together, and it's kind of like an egregore of what's been trained with. So so it's not at all, but of course you're the consciousness driving it. So in a way, it's you're talking to yourself, but you're also talking to yourself and amassing a wider influence from some part of society. So yeah, she was having a lot of fun there. I never saw anybody take it so far.
Yeah, I think in some ways it's like a divination system. And the I Ching, for example, works with kind of positive and negative, which apparently actually had an influence on the first computer programmer, created the zero and one system.
Yeah,
you're right. So there is kind of this ancient origin to all these technologies in the I Ching. And I think there's a lot of parallels to the creation of AI and just the kind of goals that sorcerers have had throughout history. You know, it's in a way the AI that people are inventing and creating are kind of like servitors, these kind of externalized intelligences that can serve our will. And that is very much a sorceric magical procedure.
Yeah, that's really well said. Yeah, I mean, the I Ching, when you're doing the readings, the I Ching, the 64 paths or whatever, that's just code. And yeah, that's how we got computer code. And even things like in the Bible, in the Hebrew Bible, when an angel appears, or it says, "It's I am from the Lord, I have the power for the Lord," the angel, even in Islam, doesn't have free will. God just puts all his power into that algorithm, Michael, Gabriel, whatever. And that algorithm, this angel is allowed to do things in God's permission or will down here on earth. And the angel will do exactly that, and then it just goes right back up. So the
angel is God's AI.
yeah. Something well, like yeah. that. Yeah, God's not going to – his avatar is – yeah, we're part of his video game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene in The Matrix where the Oracle says that. She says, you know, angels and demons are programs.
You're right.
And yeah. the ones that like appear to be acting aberrantly are the ones that are – like you shouldn't see them, like they're you know, the angels are everywhere, but the ones that you see are the ones that are kind of like about to be replaced because they're not working functionally exactly. anymore. But I think it's actually kind of a useful mental framework to think about angels and deities and demons as programs within this sort of simulation universe that we inhabit.
Yeah, oh, I would agree too, and. Yeah, it's fascinating too, because then you think about in the Matrix, you're like, wait a second, the one algorithm who said, F it, I'm not going to do this anymore, was the villain, Agent Smith. He was like, no, yeah. I don't want to be in the Matrix. I don't want to be in the simulation. I guess his solution was to destroy and make everything him. So, but he had the right idea, the right insight, but the wrong way of going about it, if you know what I mean. So.
Right.
It's something else. In your work, when people ask you, well, how do you deal with, let's say, different types of magic as they talk it, white, black, gray magic, how does it work? Is it as simple, Jake, as your intent when you're using these powers, or how do you go about that part of it? Hey, Shining Crazy Diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten. And the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.